Hi, this is Jill in Accounts at Beacon. This week's edition of the Black Country Talking News is for Wednesday, the 9th of September 2020.
Welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightless Charity, Beacon Centre. I'm Simon. We are pleased to inform you that our Talking News service is now once again available in CD format. And to those who have received their CD in the post, you'll notice they're in paper envelopes, not the usual plastic wallets, so there's no need to send anything back. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Online, by visiting Beacon's website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/on-air/podcasts. On Spotify and Apple Podcasts, simply search Beacon Black Country Talking News and hit the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Now, this week and next week, we're bringing you a different Talking News. During lockdown, Beacon temporarily suspended sending out the Black Country Talking News on CD, but still produced it online and digitally. So for our CD listeners, we're going to bring you some of those items we've previously done, but you've missed. Plus, we've got one or two new items to throw in as well. For the next 2 weeks, we're bringing you a magazine-style Black Country Talking News with our new service returning back on the week commencing 23rd of September. So, let's get going. Reading this week, we have Mina, Flashback Roger, Pete, Kez, Black Country History Steve, Sharon, Talking Book Steve, and of course me, Simon. Included this week is our weekly quiz. We look at this week in history with our flashback section. We look at the season of autumn. We'll have a blog from Sharon on living with sight loss during lockdown. Some sight loss tips with Pete. Our weekly Talking Book review. Environmental and sustainability ideas for the kitchen with Kez. We have Black Country History, where we look at the life of Dudley's Duncan Edwards, plus a music quiz to end. Now, last week's music quiz, Pete, do you have the answers?
I have the answers here, Simon, so let's run through them. So question number one was, who had a Christmas number one in 1968 with Lily the Pink? And the answer was The Scaffold. Question two, now this is the one I think would have got you, because it got me. In 1970, which male singer from Coventry had hits with Belfast Boy and Indian Reservation? The answer here was Don Farden. Okay. And finally, question number three. In 1971, which female legend sang about gypsies, tramps and thieves? Well, the answer was Cher. Okay, so those are our questions. And we've got another music quiz coming up at the end. But it's back to you, Simon.
Thanks, Pete. Now, I'm not going to lie, as soon as you mentioned Christmas number one, I did start to panic. So I checked the date, realised it was still September. We're all fine. I've got time, I've missed nothing. And now, our flashback on this week in history quiz also coming up a little bit later on. But here's a piece we wanted to play again for all those of you who missed it. With the football season about to start, let's look back at the life of a great footballer and one of Dudley's most famous icons, Duncan Edwards, with Steve.
Duncan was born on the 1st of October 1936 in Dudley. His father, Gladstone, was a metal polisher for Joseph Sankey and Sons, and his mother, Sarah Ann, was a stay-at-home mom. Duncan's love of football began as a toddler, with his father recalling him kicking a ball up and down in the living room of their home before he could even walk, held up in a set of reins. Duncan attended primary school at the Priory. Dorothy Hayden, a near neighbour who attended the same school, remembered the boy whose only interest was football. If you ever wanted him, he was usually found on the waste ground at the back of the school playing football with anyone and everyone. Even at this young age, Duncan, who would later receive the nickname Big Dunk and the Tank, possessed an imposing figure. Dave Partridge, who played in the Priory school team with Duncan, noted, "He was a colossus. He was so big I could hide behind him. Following his move to Wolverhampton Street Secondary School, Duncan became part of a very successful folk dancing team, which he enjoyed very much. However, his two passions would clash in 1950. Duncan, at the age of 11, was selected for an England under-14 trial match against Northern Ireland. The trial, unfortunately, fell on the same day as the National Morris and Sword Dancing Festival. Duncan, after initial deliberation, headed to Oldham, where he was to claim his place in the England team. England would go on to win the game 5-2, with Duncan scoring in front of 18,000 spectators. It wasn't long before clubs were queuing up, including Wolverhampton Wanderers, Aston Villa, West Bromwich Albion and Birmingham City, with the former most fancying their chances. This was not only due to Duncan's father being a supporter, but also because they were regarded by many as the most glamorous team in the country during the early 1950s. However, it was Manchester United who would win the race for his signature. And it wasn't long after Duncan signed for the club that he would be making his first team debut. On Friday the 3rd of April 1953, Duncan, along with the boys of the ground staff, was busy with his daily chores, ensuring Old Trafford was spick and span for their following afternoon fixture against Cardiff City, when someone shouted, "Duncan, the boss wants to see you in his office." Duncan was instructed, "Go get your football boots, son. You're playing for the first team tomorrow." Duncan had broken into the first team and would retain his place, only called on for youth and reserve games when his presence was required. He was included in the youth team for the FA Cup semi-final and final games versus Wolverhampton Wanderers and West Bromwich Albion that season, ensuring they retained the trophy. Despite being eligible to play, the inclusion of a player of his calibre drew much criticism from opponents and the media alike due to his outstanding ability. Busby, United's manager, responded that to suggest that because of his exceptional talent he should not play in youth games is, in my opinion, ridiculous. On the 24th of March 1954, Duncan played his first game for the England B team against Germany. In a report of a game, Desmond Hackett, a journalist, wrote, "This Edwards is going to become the terror of the continent before he has even got down to serious shaving." By the 1954-55 season, he was a regular in the team, and by 2nd of April 1955, he would gain his first full international call-up against Scotland at Wembley, a 7-2 victory for England. In doing so, he'd become the youngest post-war international to represent England in a full international fixture. Despite achieving numerous accolades and great success at such a tender age, Duncan remained modest, continuing to ride to games on his old rally bike, stopping to sign autographs for fans. When he returned home in 1954, he was already a star in Dudley, but he did not relish the fame. Although he would stop for handshakes and to sign autographs, he would often go fishing somewhere remote to escape the unwanted attention. In the summer of 1955, Duncan was called up for 2 years mandatory national service, but was granted leave on weekends to play for United. United would go on to win the league that season, with Duncan a pivotal part of the team. At the end of the season, England would play the world champions, West Germany, and despite the odds, run out winners. Duncan was outstanding in that game, running from his own half and powering an effort past the opposition goalkeeper, earning the nickname Boom Boom Edwards by their fans and their press because of the big Bertha shot in his boots. A big Bertha or a howitzer was a naval cannon used by the German army in the First World War. By 1956, Duncan would go on to be recognised by journalists as the third best player in the world, despite his tender age. However, Duncan's meteoric rise would sadly end when, following a game in Belgrade, the team's plane slid sideways and through a fence, with the port wing smashing through a house, both setting on fire. The plane then collided with a hut containing a vehicle and fuel, which immediately exploded. 7 players and 14 other passengers died at the scene. Duncan was taken to hospital with multiple leg fractures, fractured ribs, and severely damaged kidneys. After a 15-day battle to save his life, he sadly passed away on the 21st of February 1958, aged 21. Over 5,000 people lined the streets for his funeral. Today, his legacy lives on, and a statue can be found of him in Dudley Town Centre.
Thanks, Steve. We'll have more Black Country history next week when we take a look at Black Country food. Tell you what, I'm looking forward to that already. But now it's that time of the week again, the one you've all been waiting for. It's this week's quiz with Mina.
Now, are you ready for the quiz? Here we go. Question one. In what year did Magellan set sail to circumnavigate the globe? Question two. What everyday item that we use today was invented in 1840? Question 3. What was the real name of Buddy Holly? Question 4. What was used for blood in the shower scene in Hitchcock Psycho? Question 5. What is Mr. Spock's famous line from Star Trek? And finally, question 6. What was the first real-life computer bug to cause a computer to malfunction in 1947? So, keep listening for the answers with Roger. If you miss them, we'll go through all the answers at the end of this week's edition. Good luck!
The answer's coming up a little bit later on then, so listen out for those. But now, what's life been like living with sight loss throughout lockdown? And it's over to one of Beacon's sight loss advisors, Sharon, to hear her experiences.
Hi, my name is Sharon and I am 54 years young. My sight loss journey started at 38 years of age, initially with diabetic retinopathy. After many treatments and operations, I also have macular degeneration, which is loss of central vision, in both eyes, a detached retina to the right eye, which was operated on but never the same after, cataracts to both eyes, and in November 2019, I was rushed to hospital very poorly to find I had glaucoma. So over the years, I have had to constantly adapt to my sight loss and find ways to try to do the things I wanted to do. My motto is, if I can find a way, I will. If not, I now ask for help. I used to have such an attitude of being fiercely independent, but came to the realisation that yet I do need support with certain things. 15 years on, I am now registered blind and still working in the sight loss sector for Beacon. I have a beautiful guide dog called Jeannie. She is blonde, nearly white, and is 5 years old. She looks like a baby seal and is very sociable. When COVID-19 struck and we had to work from home, it was a shock. For the first few weeks, I set up my little office in the kitchen on the table. Why did I choose the kitchen? Because it's where the kettle is. No, I'm only joking. It's because this is where the light is better in the house for me. I still get up at 6 a.m. as Jeannie wants her breakfast. Initially, she stood at the door waiting for us to go out to work as we travelled quite a lot as part of our job. It was hard for Jeannie the first few weeks. I must admit it was hard for me too, not having the interactions with the people face to face. Isolation can hit people in many different ways, not being able to get out and about, talking to friends and family, interacting with people, just being able to pop down to the local shop can have massive effects. The fear of contracting COVID-19 and passing it on is a huge concern. I even stopped listening to the news reports on the television as I found I couldn't sleep at night. Calling people and receiving calls for support has kept me sane over the isolation period. Listening to other people's stories and how they have been affected by the changes in how we all live and sharing a problem solving together has given me an in-depth experience and more knowledge of what people really need and yearn for. A friendly call to people is uplifting. A chat is the start to building trust and showing people there are people out there who genuinely care. This is so important for people living in isolation. You can have family and friends, but still feel isolated in life.
If you have an issue or just need a bit of advice, you can phone in and ask to speak to one of Beacon's sight loss advisors on 01902 880 111. That's 01902 880 111. Beacon's contact details coming up again at the end of this week's edition. But now it's time for Talking Books. So let's head over to Talking Books, Steve.
Hi, listeners, and welcome to this week's review of a Talking Book with me, Steve Terry. So this week I've chosen to review an all-time literary classic, fun for all the family, Treasure Island. Peg-leg pirates, colourful parrots, plundered riches, they're all in Robert Louis Stevenson's 1883 original seafaring adventure. When young Jim Hawkins decides to follow a map to buried treasure, he must befriend or outsmart memorable characters such as pirate Long John Silver, Captain Billy Bones, and island man Ben Gunn. Mutinous plans, mysterious deaths, and a tangle of double crosses keeps Jim guessing all the way to the prize. Actually inspired by real-life seafarers, Robert Louis Stevenson really does capture the adventurous spirit of the times and the imagination of readers, young and old alike. No one can fail to be captivated by the swashbuckling piracy of Treasure Island. The struggle of young Jim and his friends as they do battle on the high seas is thrillingly played out in a number of available audiobooks, some of which are recorded with full cast dramatisation and include all-star casts and household names. I do hope you enjoy this week's recommended talking book. And again, as always, if you'd like to make a suggestion for a review, email them over to Beacon or get in touch on 01902 880 111. Let us know what you'd like us to be looking at in the future, and I'd be happy to take a listen and provide a review in the future. That's all for now, folks. Take care, stay safe, enjoy the book, and arr!
Now, I've got to admit, I'm a bit worried about Talking Book, Steve. It'll be back next week with another review, though, so listen out for that. So, what happened on This Week in History, and can we find the answers to the quiz or be revealed with Flashback Roger?
Hi, everybody. This is our flashback section, where we look back at some events during the week of the 6th to the 12th of September from years gone by, and, of course, where you'll find the answers to the questions that were set earlier. The first circumnavigation of the globe occurred on the September the 6th, 1522. 31 survivors of the Ferdinand Magellan expedition complete the three-year voyage by reaching San Luca. Magellan was killed in battle during the voyage, and only 18 of the original 237 men were still on board. Only one of the five ships that started the voyage completed the journey. Approximately 232 sailors died on the expedition. The voyage proved that the globe could be circled by sea and that the world was much larger than had been previously believed. Here's an odd fact for you, though, because on September the 7th, 1840, one Luther Charles Crowell was born. He was an American inventor who invented the square-bottomed paper bag in 1872, would you believe? His bag was patented and is still in use today, and it's just one of those everyday things that we use without a second thought. Buddy Holly, whose real name was Charles Hardin Holly, was born on September the 7th, 1936. He died in 1959 together with J.P. the Big Bopper Richardson and Richie Valens in what became known as the Day the Music Died. a very young Waylon Jennings, should have been in the plane that crashed, but he gave his seat up to the big bopper who was unwell with the flu. They had started the tour following Holly's split from the crickets, and the plane should have been a quicker ride than the planned bus trip to their next venue. On September the 8th, 1960, saw the official release of Alfred Hitchcock's classic thriller Psycho. This was Hitchcock's most financially successful film, produced on a budget of about $800,000. It made over $32 million on its initial release. Paramount was reluctant to do the film, so Hitchcock financed it himself for 60% ownership of the film. To save money, Hitchcock filmed it in black and white and made it a television studio. Chocolate syrup was used for the blood swirling down the drain in the famous show scene. I'll never have drinking chocolate again the same, I don't think. Same day, but in 1966, Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek debuts on NBC in the United States with the episode The Man Trap. The episode featured the creature that became known as the Salt Monster. The original Star Trek pilot, The Cage, was deemed too cerebral and was not aired until almost 20 years after the series ended. I love Star Trek, and I think a thousand of others, us Trekkies, do. Are you a Trekkie? But as Mr. Spock would say, may we all live long and prosper. The first ever bug appeared on September the 9th, 1947. A team led by Grace Hopper finds a moth trapped in a relay's contacts, causing their computer to malfunction. Though the term bug has been used in engineering since the 1800s, this is the first recorded instance of a literal computer bug. There's thousands of them about now. Anyway, that's the quiz for this week, folks. Have a good time. See you soon. Keep safe. Bye for now. It's Roger. Ta-ra.
Who will be back with more events in history next week, of course. Now, did you get the answers to the quiz? We'll run for them at the end with Mina. Now, has summer come to an end and has autumn started yet? To clear it all up, here's Pete.
Well, as summer comes to an end, I thought it'd be quite nice to have a look at the season coming up. Autumn. So when does autumn start? Well, we often talk about it beginning to feel like autumn when the nights start to draw in and the temperatures start to feel cooler. There are two separate dates which could be said to mark the start of autumn in calendars. One is the astronomical autumn, defined by the Earth's axis and orbit around the Sun, or to do with the amount of daylight we get. And the second is a fixed date in the meteorological calendar called the meteorological autumn. It's used for consistent spacing and lengths of the seasons. So this year's astronomical autumn begins on the 22nd of September and ends on the 21st of December. The meteorological autumn, however, begins on the 1st of September and ends on the 30th of November. So who do you believe? Well, the meteorological season consists of splitting the seasons into four periods, made up of 3 months each. So that seems pretty simple enough. These seasons are split to coincide with our Gregorian calendar, making it easier for meteorological observing and forecasting to compare seasonal and monthly statistics. So in the meteorological calendar, the seasons are defined as spring, March, April and May, summer, June, July and August, autumn, September, October, November, and winter, December, January and February. Well, the meteorological calendar seems to make sense, but let's have a look at the astronomical calendar. Now, this is where we have to bring into play solstices and equinoxes that are considered to be the astronomical transition points between the seasons and mark key stages in the astronomical cycle of the Earth. All sounding a bit heavy, isn't it? In a year, there are two equinoxes, the spring and autumn, and two solstices, summer and winter. So let's have a look at the equinox first. The word equinox comes from the Latin equi, meaning equal, and nox, meaning night, accounting for the equinox marking the time when day and night are of equal length. So This is a date when day and night are roughly of the same length. Now, after the autumn equinox date, the nights will become longer and the days shorter. The autumn equinox date is Tuesday, the 22nd of September. Now, this pattern is reversed when we reach the spring equinox, which is around the 20th of March. So remember those two dates, the autumn equinox, 22nd of September, and the spring equinox, the 20th of March, when day and night time are roughly the same. Now the solstice. There are two of these. There's the summer and the winter solstice. The summer being known as the longest day, as in the most daylight, which is around the 21st of June. And the winter solstice, which is the shortest day with the least daylight, around the 21st of December. So 21st of June, 21st of December. So if we look at the equinox and the solstice dates, if we merge them together, which is all about the amount of daylight we have, these are the dates that make up the astronomical calendars. So on the astronomical calendar, the spring equinox, the 20th of March, to the summer solstice, the longest day on the 21st of June, that makes up spring. From the 21st of June to the 22nd of September, which is the autumn equinox, that makes up the summer. And from the autumn equinox, which is 22nd of September, to the winter solstice, which is the shortest day, the 21st of December, 22nd of September to the 21st of December, that makes up autumn. And from the winter solstice, the 21st of December, to the spring equinox on the 20th of March, that makes it winter. And so we go again. Hope that made sense. Well, anyway, back to autumn. It's the transition season between summer and winter, best noticed by the colour change in leaves and the harvest. As a result of falling temperatures in autumn, the chemical in the leaves that makes them green, it's called chlorophyll, begins to break down, while other chemicals, including carotene, remain to give the leaves their yellow, red and brown colours. The most vibrant displays of autumn leaves are evident when a dry summer is followed by an autumn with dry sunny days and cold or not freezing nights. It's the time of year that Keats called the season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. Autumn is a season famous for its harvest time, turning leaves, cooling temperatures and darkening nights. Autumn has been significant in many cultures throughout history, and even today, many festivals and events around the globe occur around the autumn equinox. For example, the Moon Festival in China or Michaelmas in the UK. And did you know, a study in the Journal of Aging Research found that babies born during the autumn months are more likely to live to 100 than those born during the rest of the year? The study found that 30% of US centurions born during 1880 and 1895 were born in the autumn months. Now here's a date for your diary. 24th of September, 2303. Well, generally speaking, the autumn equinox always falls on either the 22nd or the 23rd of September, but not quite always. Because the Gregorian calendar is not quite in perfect symmetry with the Earth's orbit, the autumn equinox will very occasionally fall on September the 24th. This last happened in 1931 and will next happen in 2303. I'm not too worried about that, I've got to be honest. In Greek mythology, autumn began when Persephone was abducted by Hades to be the queen of the underworld. In distress, Persephone's mother, Demeter, the goddess of the harvest, caused all the crops on earth to die until her daughter was allowed to return, marking spring. So it's even connected with Greek mythology. The Americans use the term the fall. It's another term associated with autumn. And we typically think of the fall as the North American version of the word autumn. But it was in fact widespread usage in England until relatively recently. Originally a shortening of the phrase fall of the leaf. The phrase was common in England in the 17th century. The word autumn entered the English language from the French automne and didn't become common usage until the 18th century. Well, that's autumn. So take your pick. We've got the meteorological autumn, which starts on the 1st of September, and the astronomical autumn, the day of the equinox, which starts on the 22nd of September. So which one are you going for?
I'll go somewhere in the middle. It feels like autumn, so I'll say it's autumn now. It's a bit like that Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday evening debate, isn't it? I always say it's evening from about 6 o'clock. Anyway, never mind. Environmental and sustainability ideas now with Kez.
Whether you love spending time in the kitchen or not, there are lots of ways that you can be more eco-friendly in this room. Today, I'm going to talk about my favourite three ways to be more eco-conscious in the kitchen. First up, when doing the dishes by hand, why not switch to using loofah slices to replace your dish sponge? Unlike the dish sponges that many of us use, which have a plastic component to them and so need to be thrown into the bin at the end of their life, loofah slices can be disposed of in the compost bin due to being the fruit of a plant. Added to this, they don't shed plastics when we're using them. If you've got a greenhouse and time, you can even grow your own loofah. My second tip is ditching the cling film in place of beeswax wraps or a vegan wax wrap. Wax wraps are reusable, can be used in almost the same way as cling film. The most notable exception is they cannot be used with raw meats or in situations where they'll get hot, and can be purchased from a wide range of online and high street shops. They're available in a wide range of sizes to suit your needs. So you can get small ones for your cheese, larger ones for your bread, and you can also make them really easily at home following the instructions available online. Finally, and perhaps my favourite option for making eco changes in the kitchen, is reusable kitchen towels, which I now use instead of kitchen paper. Personally, I make my own out of old hand and bath towels, which I cut up and stitch on my sewing machine, either with a simple stitched edge or with a cotton backing to make it multi-purpose and look a little bit nicer. Making the switch to a reusable kitchen towel reduces waste and reuses end-of-life towels that would otherwise be destined for the scrap bag. There are plenty of other changes that you can make around the kitchen that I've not covered here. So this includes things like changing the cleaning products that you're using to make to ones that are more eco-friendly, and changing the way you use and consume water.
Thanks, Kez. With a few suggestions now on living with sight loss, here's Pete.
Well, this week I thought let's have a look at a few strategies, a few sight loss tips, a few ideas about living at home with sight loss that might make life a little bit easier. So start off in your wardrobe, where you hang your clothes. And to help identify colours, have you thought about using safety pins? I.e. you put no safety pins on black clothes, maybe one safety pin on blue clothes, two on brown clothes. So the tactile, it might be something else, but develop your own system. Could you use safety pins as a tactile way through touch of identifying clothes? Something to think about. Could you use safety pins for keeping socks together as well? Or could you always buy the same coloured socks, so every time you pick up two socks, they're exactly the same? Unless, of course, you like the odd sock look. Now, when you take your shoes off, how about using a clothes peg to clip your shoes together so they're always in pairs and in the correct pairs as well? So when you come to put them on again, you can be absolutely sure you've got the matching pair. So a clothes peg. When making a hot drink, a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, rather than a teaspoon of sugar, which could be messy, maybe a sugar cube could be an alternative. And when chopping vegetables, have you thought about using a metal hair comb as a guide? So keep one separate, and one of those big metal combs with a handle on. And so put that into your vegetables, and then use the teeth of the comb to make the cuts into the vegetable. So it's nice and neat, and less chance of any cuts to yourself, maybe. Have you thought about using different coloured chopping boards when you're chopping vegetables again? So we're using contrast here. So if you're chopping a cauliflower, say, or a potato on a white board, then it's white on white, so it's a little bit hard to see. So perhaps you might get a red chopping board for that to make it easier to see. And of course, if you're chopping up a red pepper, then you might want to use your white chopping board. So there are different colour chopping boards around, so contrast is pretty useful there. So have a look for different coloured chopping boards. And on the subject of contrast, very helpful around the home. Placemats are quite useful when you think about contrast. So let's say again you're making a hot drink and you've got a white mug and you're putting it on a white surface, a white tablecloth. So it's white on white. So it blends in, maybe a little bit harder to see. What you could do is get maybe a dark blue mat, put the dark blue mat on the white tablecloth, then put your white mug or cup and saucer on there so you've created a contrast, so it's easier to see. Think about that with plates, with tablecloths, different coloured tablecloths. Coloured beakers could be another one you could use. Pouring water is sometimes difficult. So maybe could a coloured beaker help with that? In the bathroom, maybe you've got a white bathroom suite. So it's a white loo, white sink, white bath, white shower, and you've got white soap, white towels, white flannels. So everything's white. So rather than change your bathroom suite, why not change your soap, towels and flannels? So they're a contrasting colour, so they're just easier to see. In the bedroom, duvet covers, if they are the same colour as your carpet, and where the duvet meets the carpet, you can't see the edge, so there's a potential tripping hazard there maybe. So think about contrast there as well, and also keep it well lit. That would be another useful one. So contrast and lighting together can be very useful. Armchair cover is another one to consider as well. If you've got an armchair cover, think about making it a contrasting colour to the armchair or settee that you've got, so you can clearly identify the edge. Cushions, another one which might be useful. Different coloured cushions, contrasting cushions. So just makes it a little bit easier to see, a bit easier to use. So just a few sight loss tips there. I hope you found them useful. But what we would love is if you have your own sight loss tips that we could share with others. So we'd love to hear from you. So if you want to ring them in, please do so. Give us a call on 01902 880 111. We'd love to hear your sight loss tips.
And that number again, in case you missed it, 01902 880 111. That's 01902. 880111. Feel free to give us a call. Now the quiz. I nearly forgot. Mina, have you got the answers?
I have, Simon. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year did Magellan set sail to circumnavigate the globe? The answer is 1522. Question 2. What everyday item that we use today was invented in 1840? And the answer, of course, is the square bottom paper bag. Question 3. What was the real name of Buddy Holly? And the answer is Charles Hardin Holly. Question 4. What was used for blood in the shower scene in Hitchcock Psycho? And the answer here is chocolate syrup. Question 5. What is Mr. Spock's famous line from Star Trek? And the answer is live long and prosper. And finally, question 6. What was the first real life computer bug to cause a computer to malfunction in 1947? And the answer here is, it was a real-life moth who got stuck in the computer. Well, I'm sure you got all the answers right this week. Another flashback on This Week in History quiz next week. Are we finishing with the music quiz this week, Simon?
We are indeed, Mina. And with that in mind, I'll hand you over to Pete.
Good idea, Simon. So, before we start, as always, thank you to Andy Coulson for sending them in. So we always appreciate the questions, Andy. Thank you very much. So question number one. Are you ready, by the way? Okay. Performing under his last name only, who had a number one in 1972 with Without You? So in 1972, performing under his last name only, who had a number one with Without You? Question number two. What colour ribbon did Dawn tie around the old oak tree in 1973? So what colour ribbon did Dawn tie around the old oak tree in 1973? You've got that already, haven't you? And question number three. Which Canadian had his final hit in 1974 with You're Having My Baby? So which Canadian had his final hit in 1974 with You're Having My Baby? Well, there's a thing. As always, we'll give you the answers next week. Is it time to finish, Simon?
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!